Hi, I'm Trish Crawford. Welcome to Fire Within Us, a program specifically geared towards tweens and teens. Listen to professionals, role models, elders, and of course, you teens as we discuss issues that matter to you. Join in on some fun as we test your knowledge with our cranial challenges and did you know facts. Learn your language from our retired Cree teacher, Daisy Turner. All of this and more coming your way. So be sure to stay tuned and I will be right back with Fire Within Us.
River I've been running ever since. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. Something beyond the sky. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Now I go to the movies and I go somebody keeps telling me don't hang around. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Yes, sir. So now I go to my brother. And I say, brother, help me please. But somehow he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Oh, there were times I thought I wouldn't last. I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know a change's gonna come. Yes, it will. Oh, I know a change's gonna come. I said I know. Change is gonna come. I see it now.
Have some jewelry that lost its shine? Drop your doll-looking jewelry into a glass of fizzing Alka-Seltzer for a couple of minutes. It will sparkle and shine when you pull it out. And we're back with Fire Within Us. The Northern Lights are nature's light show, with quantum leaps in oxygen and nitrogen atoms in an impressive display of luminous curtains and rays that dance above the tundra. They involve the interplay of elementary particle physics with superstition, mythology, and fairy tales. Their fickle hues, their radiance, and their grandeur have filled people with wonder and inspired artists. They have frightened people to think that the end is at hand. More exact explanations could not be given until modern physics was developed, and knowledge about the Earth's magnetosphere was obtained from measurements with artificial satellites. We pose certain questions pertaining to the Northern Lights with relevant information. What are the Northern Lights? Where are the Northern Lights seen? What is the energy source of this phenomenon? And what determines the colors of the Northern Lights? I have with me today Paul Heckert, a professor at the Western Carolina University in North Carolina, to answer some of these questions that we have about the Northern Lights. So stay tuned. When we come back, we will be having our interview with Paul Heckert about Northern Lights, and we'll have a lot more for you on Fire Within Us.
Everyone.
And we're back with Fire Within Us.
Joining me on the phone is Paul Heckert, a professor in physics and astronomy at the Western Carolina University in North Carolina. Good morning, Paul.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Paul will be talking to us about the northern lights that we often see here in the northern areas. So, Paul, can you tell us what the Aurora Borealis is?
Okay, Aurora Borealis and Northern Lights, it's two names for the same thing. There's also Aurora Australis, which is the southern lights visible near the South Pole in Antarctica. But what it is it's caused by interactions between electrons and protons blowing away from the sun. It's a phenomenon called a solar wind. These electrons and protons interact with the Earth's magnetic field and atoms in the Earth's upper atmosphere to cause the aurora. Basically, what they do is the electrons and protons from the sun, it's mostly electrons, when they encounter the Earth's magnetic field, they spiral, traveling a spiral path along the magnetic field lines. They interact with the upper atmosphere near the north and south magnetic poles. That's why they're visible at high northern latitudes or high southern latitudes.
Okay, so it would be called the southern lights,
then? It would be called the southern lights.
Oh, okay.
It's difficult to see them outside of Antarctica, but maybe southern New Zealand, southern Australia, places like that, it would be possible to see the southern lights.
Do the northern lights depend on the activity of the sun?
Absolutely. The sun has an 11-year activity cycle. It peaks every 11 years. We see lots of sunspots and lots of other types of solar activity. During that time, we have what we call solar storms. Solar storms blast material out from the sun, so there's more of these electrons coming from the sun that can interact with the Earth's magnetic field and produce the aurora display. So when there's a solar storm, there's more likely to be an aurora.
So now when the storm happens and it's sending the, is it particles or electrons or something you said?
Mostly electrons from the sun, although some protons too.
All right, and this is coming down into our atmosphere, into our magnetic field.
Right.
Is this what causes the color?
Yeah, what causes the color is these electrons strike atoms in the upper atmosphere of the Earth. When they do that, it gives extra energy to the electrons in those atoms. The electrons in those atoms then, well, to use chemistry terminology, for anyone that studied chemistry, they go to a higher energy level. Without using chemistry terminology, they have more energy. When they release that energy, they release it in the form of light. The color of the light depends on the type of atom or molecule. And there's an area of chemistry called spectroscopy, and it's related to spectroscopy. It's the same principle that causes a neon sign to work.
Mm-hmm.
Neon atoms glow bright red. If you made a neon sign with an element other than neon, like oxygen gas or nitrogen gas, which is what's mostly in the Earth's upper atmosphere, you'd get the same color displays as we get for the aurora. You know, the nitrogen in the atmosphere, oxygen in the atmosphere, each element like that produces different colors.
All right, so what causes the colors of the aurora? Is it when the electrons are carried along with the solar wind? When it strikes the nitrogen, which color does that produce?
What happens is the electrons strike an atom or a molecule. When they strike a nitrogen molecule, they produce certain colors. When they strike an oxygen molecule, they produce different other colors. Atomic oxygen produces a red color. Molecular oxygen produces a green color. Molecular nitrogen produces the bluish colors. So those are the most typical colors. You know, the reddish color for oxygen can be sort of a brownish red or red to brownish red. So sometimes then if you get a mixture of colors, you know, white light is a mixture of, you know, all the different colors of light.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a good mixture of colors, it can appear whitish. See a purple color, that can be a mixture of the blue and red, and it appears to be purple.
Then here in the north, we get a lot of the green auroras. Would that be, like, so are we high on atomic oxygen?
No, I think that the atmosphere is pretty well mixed. The atmosphere is what's about 80% nitrogen and about 20% oxygen.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, the electrons get to the altitude that they can excite those particular types of atoms. So there might be some conditions in that that give the altitude that way. But they can glow at various colors.
Right.
And sometimes it depends on the level. So you might have, you know, the green at one level and the red at another level because of the electrons penetrate to the right depth that they have the right amount of energy for the oxygen or for the nitrogen.
What shapes the northern lights? Like, what causes them to take their shapes?
Okay, the shape of the northern lights is the paths of the electrons. These electrons coming to strike the atoms, they interact with the magnetic field, and they can only follow a certain specific path. They can't move perpendicular to the magnetic field lines for the Earth's magnetic field. What they do is they move in a spiral path that's parallel to the magnetic field. So because the paths of these electrons are constrained that way, they can only move in certain paths, the auroras have that specific shape. So it's basically it's the shape of the Earth's magnetic field that causes the shape of the aurora.
Okay.
And so you get sort of a curtain-like shape because they have to follow the magnetic field path, so they can't go perpendicular to that and fill up the whole sky that way.
Yes, that's right.
Is it only the areas that have the colder temperatures? Are they the only places that get the view of the northern lights?
Well, it's not so. It's not caused by the cold. It's caused by just being close to the north and south magnetic poles. And, of course, the polar regions on the Earth are much colder than the equator. It's not the temperature that causes it. It's just the fact that the polar regions are where you get the magnetic poles where you can get the aurora, and that's also the regions where you can where it happens to be cold. Another requirement for seeing the aurora is that it has to be dark, and so it's easier to see them in the wintertime because it's dark longer. You know, the nights are longer in the winter. And, of course, it's also colder in the wintertime.
So water and temperature, they have nothing to do with viewing the northern lights?
It's not caused by that, but when it's cold, it's also in the winter, you have the longer nights, so there's more opportunity to see them because they're seldom bright enough to be visible in the daytime.
Now, where is the best place to view the northern lights?
Occasionally you get really, really bright displays where it can be visible at mid-range latitudes. I saw one display in it's around 1980 or 81 visible from Nebraska, and that particular one was visible as far south as Arizona. I have a picture of it taken from southern Arizona. You know, but it's very rare to see them that far south, very unusual. But any place further north is possible. It's also best viewing on the part of the Earth, the longitude of the Earth that's directly opposite the sun at that time, which basically means around midnight is the best time to see them.
And which would be the best months to view these?
It's really not related to the month, but again, December is best because that's when you have the longest nights.
Oh, I see. All
but,
right.
You know, they can come around in any month of the year, but if they come in June and you're in high northern latitudes, it might not be dark.
All right, with that being said, we'll take our first break, and when we come back, we will find out from Paul what are the effects that the northern lights, also known as aurora borealis, have on Earth.
Let the beat control your body. Let the beat control your body. Control your body, let the beat control your body. Let the beat control your body, let the beat control your body. Let the beat control your body, let the beat control your body, let the beat control your body. Let the beat control your body, let the beat control your body, let the beat control your body.
Now let my beat control your body. Simply
places. Move your system, change the spaces. When I'm on a mic, you can't refuse. No, I didn't gain a reach, I came to amuse. Techno making, no mistaking, never faking, always breaking it down. To a party, now let my beat control your body.
Control your body, let the beat control your body.
Now let my beat control your body.
Let the beat control your body, let the beat control your body, let the beat control your body.
My beat, B-E-A-T, it's my beat and it controls your body.
It penetrates your brain, without my beat you'll go insane.
It's my beat and you can break it.
It's my beat and you can fake it.
It's my beat and you can copy. Let my beat control your body. Just for you to show, you can't stand still cause you got to move. You feel the baseline, you feel the groove. My beats accept you just as you are. Drives your way just like a fast car. It's my beat, it belongs to me. So let my beat control your body. To move your feet, get on, y'all.
Let the beat control your body. Let the beat control your body. Let the beat control your body.
Let the beat control your body.
Let the beat control your body. Let the beat control your body. Let the beat control your body.
Now let my beat control your body. Let my beat. Bass in your face, bass in your face.
Let the beat control your body.
And we're back with Fire Within Us, talking to Paul Heckert about Northern Lights. With all the activity of the Aurora Borealis, does this have any effect on the Earth?
Okay, they have effects on the upper atmosphere, which don't really affect us down on the surface too much. But the solar storms and the aurora, that can, you know, like a lot of shortwave radio communications, they bounce off the upper atmosphere, off the ionosphere. So it can interfere with communications. And then radio waves go up to satellites and bounce off satellites, those sort of signals. If you have strong magnetic storms, which is when we have the aurora, that can knock out those communications. So you can't affect our long-distance radio communications.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, oh. And so it might knock out all the satellites if we get a strong storm, and then you can't use your ATM card because it depends on the satellite to check and see if you actually have any money in your account. Things like that they're all linked. Or you try to call someone on your cell phone and it goes up to a satellite because it's long distance. It might not work. Things like that can happen during
That's
a very strong storm.
Okay, now that you said that, now why is it that we're not seeing the Northern Lights as often as we used to? Like when I was a kid, we used to see them quite often, but now it's not seen as much.
There's an 11-year solar cycle. So there's an 11-year cycle in the amount of solar activity. During the peak of that cycle, you're much more likely to get auroral activity. So for people who are teenagers now, when they were younger, it would have been during the peak of the cycle, and now we're in the minimum of the cycle.
So when are we going to be at our next peak?
Well, that's a really good question. We should be starting up from the minimum of the cycle about a year ago, and it hasn't been happening. But the question is, okay, is it just going to be a little late? You know, the cycle lengths sometimes vary. It might be a little late, so maybe it'll happen next year, and we'll start to come up, and we'll get to the peak in a few years. Or there are occasionally periods where you have extended periods of very few, if any, sunspots and very few, if any, solar activity. One of those occurred in the late 1600s, and it was a very, very cold period in Europe. It might be related to climate-type things in ways we don't completely understand yet. You know, the cycle might just be a little bit late, or we might be going into one of these extended minima where we won't have much activity for an extended period of time.
So I guess that being said, then, it would be pretty hard to predict the Northern Lights.
Right, yeah, they're more likely to happen when you have, again, this kind of solar activity, and we don't know what's going on with the solar cycle right now. We don't understand these long-term things. There's an 11-year cycle, but there's longer things that aren't as understood. And predicting aurora in general, it's sort of like predicting the weather. You can make a prediction, and sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you don't.
Right. Something I heard when the space shuttle astronauts are up in space, how does the auroras affect them?
Well, they can got a really great view of them because it's up at, they're at very high altitudes. If you have enough radiation, you know, like it's more the solar storm and all these particles coming from the sun, they don't get as much protection as we do from the Earth's atmosphere, so they probably get a slightly higher dose of radiation.
So then they would have to seek shelter in their shuttles, I suppose,
well,
if they're on the outside.
They stay inside and hope the skin's thick enough to block it.
When the electrons are coming into our magnetic field, does the auroras ever touch the ground?
They're usually fairly high up. You know, they're like a minimum altitude of 60 miles. That's usually the lower level. And I've never heard of anything where it actually gets lower to the ground. But because the Earth curves, if you're viewing aurora way off in the distance, because of the curvature of the Earth, it may look low on the horizon. It may look like it's touching the ground off on the horizon. So that can happen, but it's still, you know, probably 60 miles or more above the surface of the Earth, but the curvature of the Earth gives an effect that it looks like it's on the horizon.
Some people say that the aurora does make sounds, the Northern Lights, that they do make sounds. Is this true? Like, do they give off any kind of static sound or electrical sound?
Well, that's controversial.
Oh, is it?
Some people claim they hear it, but, you know, scientists go and study the sound, they can't find it. You know, they can't, take out a tape recorder and record it or something like that. So they haven't succeeded in doing that. So, but then enough people claim it that maybe there's something to it. There's something there we don't understand yet. And so people need to study that in detail to see if there is some sort of sound. They do emit radio waves. So if you get the right frequency radio receiver, you can pick up the radio waves and, just like an ordinary radio works, transfer it into sound. And so you can get sounds that way. But it's actually the radio waves then that come across as a sound through a radio receiver.
The Northern Lights seem to respond when we used to whistle really loud. Like their activity would heighten, like they would just dance. That's how we got them to dance. Was that sound making them do that, or do they just do that?
I think they just do that. Yeah, I don't think, I mean, they're 60 miles up, so I'm sure your whistle couldn't be heard 60 miles away. Yeah, the sounds that you make from the Earth shouldn't affect the aurora in any way. Again, kids playing just can't make a loud enough sound that way. But they do dance a lot, so you might have whistled and it danced, and then you think, oh yeah, my whistle caused it to dance, but it would have happened anyway.
Darn.
I know, I disappointed you.
And here I thought I was doing something great. So how can a regular camera pick up the Northern Lights?
It's possible to photograph them. You know, with an ordinary camera, with film, digital camera, whatever. The trick is to get the exposure at the right time. So do a lot of tries. Now, the problem is they're faint, so it takes a long time exposure if something is faint.
What do you mean?
You know, like, okay, you open the shutter for a while.
Right.
Yeah, most modern cameras, they just decide on something, but you have to have a camera where you can, like the older cameras, you can adjust how long it's exposing the film.
Oh.
Okay, which cameras don't have film anymore, right? So, but you adjust how long, and for taking a picture of something that's very, very faint, you keep the shutter open for a longer amount of time. Okay, so by using a longer time exposure that way, keeping the shutter open for a longer time, you can take a picture of something that's faint, but then the aurora will be, since they dance around, the image will be fuzzy. So there's sort of a balance. A short time exposure, it might not be sensitive enough so you can get sharp images. A long time exposure, you can pick up the faint lights, but the image is going to be a little fuzzy. It can be done with a camera, but it is tricky photography. And so it takes a reasonably skilled photographer or someone that's not as skilled just trying a whole lot of different things.
Right.
To see what works. With a digital camera, you can just try a bunch of stuff. And, you know, if you have an instant preview, well, that didn't work. Try something else until you get something that works. And so that's, I guess, the best way to learn how to do that is just to experiment.
All right, Paul, thank you for having this interview with us today on the Northern Lights.
Okay, I was glad to be able to come, or glad to be able to talk to you.
All right, thanks a lot, Paul. Have a good day.
All right.
And you were just listening to Paul Heckert, professor at the Western Carolina University in North Carolina. I'm Trish Crawford, and you're listening to Wawate Radio. You're listening to Fire Within Us, right here on Wawate Radio, CJWT 106.7 FM.
This is Smoke Signals, news that matters to you.
Today on Smoke Signals, learn about the Helmets On campaign, put on by Rick Lemieux from the Timmins Police Service here in Timmins, Ontario.
The Helmets On campaign is something we started a couple years ago. Last year, because of manpower, we didn't really do it. So this year, we brought it back and tried to make it as big as possible. We've teamed up with the Timmins Community Safety Committee, the Porcupine Health Unit, Seizure and Brain Injury Center, as well as Walmart, McDonald's, and Wood Green Advertising. Basically, what we're doing this year is, sir, when an officer is on patrol, if he observes youth in our community wearing their bicycle helmets while riding their bicycle, he will stop and talk to them. They get a ballot where they can fill out and have a chance to win a brand new bicycle at the end of the summer. They get a new brand new bike and a new helmet. When they do get stopped by the officer as well, they get a free coupon from McDonald's. And it's just a way to encourage our youth to wear their helmet. Of course, if they're not wearing their helmets, officers are also going to be looking for that this summer. And if you're not wearing your helmet and you're under 18 years of age, somebody will be charged. It's either if you're 16 and 17 years of age, the individual gets charged, and 15 and under, the parents will be charged for allowing their kids to ride their bicycle without their helmet. So it's something we really want to get out there. So this way here, doing the Helmets On campaign, we're putting a positive spin on it. You know, if you are wearing your helmet, you know, you'll have a chance to win a brand new bike. You get a coupon for McDonald's, and you know, it's just something really positive that we want to do in our community.
So this is definitely one time you would actually want to be stopped by a police officer.
That's right. This is a good time to be stopped for wearing your helmet.
Yeah, so now when a child is driving his or her bike and they have their helmet on but not properly on, will the charges still go ahead or will you just give the warning?
They can be. It'll be up to the individual officer. Personally, for myself, I would show them the right way to do it, but I've have an advantage there because I do the bike rodeos every year with every grade 2 and grade 3 student in Timmins. So I help a lot of kids put on their helmets. I've gotten used to it. For the other officers, I'm not sure what they would do, but you are supposed to wear it properly. It's supposed to be on your head, tied up, and there's all, you know, different things. You're supposed to have two fingers from the helmet to your eyebrow. It's supposed to make a V around your ear, and you're supposed to be able to put one finger under the chin strap.
Right, and just enforcing the fact that your straps do have to be buckled.
Yes, they do have to be buckled. Yes. Not going to do too much good if they're not.
All right, Rick, is there anything else that you want to mention?
Yeah, the draw will be held the 31st of August at 3 p.m. here at the Timmins Police Station. And, wear your helmet. It's a safe thing to do. Also for parents, I think it's a good idea for the parents to wear their helmets. Legally, they don't have to. But if your child sees you wearing your helmet, chances are he'll wear his helmet. I know I always wear mine, and I have a little one at home too, and I just want to set the example for him. It should be mandatory for everybody, I believe.
I will be sure to put mine on.
And you might get a free coupon for McDonald's.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem. Thank you so much.
Thanks for getting this message across.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
If you have any news or upcoming events that you wanted posted on Smoke Signals, then please email us at cjwt@wawate.on.ca. Let us know of any of your upcoming events or any issues that you would like to be mentioned on Smoke Signals.
For today's Cree lesson.
To read, I am ta, I am ta. He read it, ki I am tau, ki I am tau. Say it, itwe, itwe. Count, hagtaso, hagtaso. To read, I am ta, I am ta. He read it, ki I am tau, ki I am tau. Say it, hitwe, hitwe. Count, hagtaso, hagtaso.
It's time to test your knowledge with Cranial Challenge.
It's time now for Cranial Challenge. Put your thinking caps on.
Are you ready to test your knowledge? To make this more fun and challenging, grab some friends or family members to compete with each other to see who comes up with the correct answer first. These questions are from the grade 3 level. You'd be surprised at how much we adults had forgotten. Good luck! Your first trivia question comes from the math department. If you have 23 ones, how many tens do you have? So if you have 23 ones, how many tens do you have? If your answer was 2, you're correct. There are 2 sets of 10s plus 3 ones to make the answer 23. And now from our Aboriginal language category. Which is the correct Cree word for spoon?
Manahwagan, Jishtahagan, Emahwan.
Again, we are looking for the correct Cree word for spoon.
Manahwagan, Jishtahagan, Emma Juan.
If you said
Emma Juan,
you're correct. The next question comes from the Language Arts Department. At night, we watch for shooting stars. Is this a statement or an exclamation? At night, we watch for shooting stars. Is this a statement or an exclamation?
If your guess was a statement, you're correct. The next question comes from our science category. What living things breathe through their gills? So what living things breathe through their gills? If your answer was fish, you're correct. And now from our Aboriginal language category. Which is the correct Cree word for window?
Ishquatim, bispapun, ashugun.
Again, we are looking for the correct Cree word for window.
Ishquatim, bispapun, ashugun.
And if you said
Bispapun,
you're correct. Our next trivia question comes again from the math category. If you add two odd numbers, is the sum always odd or even? So if you add two odd numbers, is the sum always going to be odd or even? If your answer was even, you're correct. An example of this would be 9 plus 9, two odd numbers, and the even number they come up with would be 18. The next trivia question is coming from our language arts category. How is the plural of puppy spelled? So how is the plural of puppy spelled? If your correct spelling is P-U-P-P-I-E-S, puppies, then you're correct. And now from our Aboriginal language category. Which is the correct Cree word for sick?
Bafo, akaso, utishjamo.
Again, we are looking for the correct Cree word for sick.
Bafo. Akaso, utishjamo.
If you said
akaso,
you're correct. Your last trivia question is coming from our grab bag. What country did tortillas come from? So which country did tortillas come from?
Señorita, I am thinking to the answer of these things.
If your answer is Mexico, you're correct. I hope you had fun with today's trivia. I look forward to our next challenge. Did you know? You probably heard that you can temporarily replace a broken fan belt with pantyhose in an emergency. Well, don't believe it. It won't work. Jim Kerr, automotive technician instructor at the Saskatchewan Institute of Applied Arts and Science and Tech Talk columnist for CanadianDriver.com, says, pulleys in most vehicles require flat belts, not the rounded shape pantyhose would present. Even on a V-belt pulley, they fly off as soon as the engine starts. We know, we've tried it. A much better idea is to replace the belts before they get in bad condition.
It's now time to
live,
laugh,
love,
and learn.
Procrastination. Almost everyone procrastinates to some extent. And there are a myriad of reasons as to why people procrastinate. It could be as simple as sheer laziness, incorrect time management, or simply putting off something that you may find unpleasant until the very last minute. If you want to go deeper, procrastination could be caused by underlying feelings of low self-worth or fear of failure. Rather than dwell on the whys, what is most important is to realize that at its worst, procrastination can be debilitating and keeps us from realizing our full potential. On the positive side, we must also accept that no matter what the cause, procrastination does not have to rule our lives, as we all have the power to change. Here are some ways to break the procrastination habit. Write it down. Make a list of what needs to be done. This is the first step, so it doesn't need to be in any special order, but record everything that you would normally put off till later, no matter how trivial. Prioritize. This can be done in one or two ways, either by deadlines, such as dates, or by priority. Some things need to be completed sooner. Decide by order of importance. Categorize. Get a special calendar or, better yet, a notebook with lots of room to write notes and decide which are short and long-term goals that you intend to accomplish. For instance, a short-term goal would be to organize your cupboards, and a long-term goal would be to get to a healthy weight. Break down your priority list. Break down your priority list. Look at what can be accomplished immediately and what will take a few days or longer. Some things need to be broken down into smaller goals in order to accomplish them. Fill in your calendar. Set time aside for each goal while still keeping to your deadlines. Think from the end. Close your eyes and visualize. See yourself as if you have already accomplished your goals. Imagine how good it would feel and what others will say as they see the positive changes in you. Try to do this every day for a few minutes. Be accountable. Find someone who will keep you honest. Tell a good friend what you want to do and make them hold it to you by checking your progress every few days. Remember that Rome wasn't built in one day, and breaking the procrastination habits takes a lot of commitment and perseverance. It is not something you will accomplish overnight, so be patient with yourself. Try not to allow lots of times to accomplish your goals and give yourself a bit of leeway for possible delays. This will give you the needed confidence to realize that you can accomplish all your goals and meet any deadlines without overstressing yourself. Finally, we all know that children learn by example. So make it a point to show your children how important it is not to put off things that need to be done. I find that unfinished business haunts me and makes it difficult to move forward. When I follow through and get it done, it gives me a sense of accomplishment and pride. What a great tool to teach your children, and something that can only benefit them in their adult years. Looking for a way to save money and time? Here are some ideas from Extraordinary Uses for Ordinary Things. Tired of biting into stale potato chips from a previously opened bag? Well, here's a sure way to keep your snacks fresh. Use clip-on clothespins to reseal bags of potato chips or other snacks, cereals, crackers, and seeds. The foods will stay fresh longer, and you won't have as many spills in the pantry either. Use a clothespin for added freshness insurance when you store foods in a freezer bag, too. This idea was brought to you by Reader's Digest, Extraordinary Uses for Ordinary Things. Northern Lights, created by me special. As the Northern Lights lit the sky, he felt a joy that he couldn't deny. And the female penguins came, he did not feel the same, as he did before, filled with glee, and even now he could see his mate coming over the ice with sleek fur that looked nice. He could finally eat again with all the other men. These same lights also lit a path out of the pit for our trapped polar bear friends who had already made amends and were thankful to be outside after swallowing their pride. And they wouldn't roam on their way home. They also brought comfort to seals and a relief that uplifts and heals. For they soon saw their mother coming near, wondering how she escaped the net in fear. And everything seemed to disappear. They couldn't see or hear anything except for their mother. For both of their brothers, all were thankful for the lights on all dark, cold nights. Though there might be something around the bend, but for now, the story has to come to an end.
It's now time for Creative Circle.
Hi kids, welcome to Creative Circle. In today's segment, we're going to be turning a lemon into a battery. Now this battery won't be able to start your car, but you will be able to feel the current with your tongue. So what you're going to need is a lemon, a dime, and a penny. Again, you're going to need a lemon, a dime, and a penny. Now what I need for you to do is to roll the lemon on a flat surface to activate the juices. So you're going to roll the lemon on a flat surface, applying just a bit of pressure onto the lemon so that you can activate the juices and get them moving around inside the lemon. Next, you're going to cut two small slits in your lemon about a half inch apart. So that would be about 1 1/4 centimeters apart. So you're going to have two slits in your lemon about 1 1/4 centimeters apart. And in those slits, you're going to place the penny into one slot and then put the dime in the other slot. Once the lemon has the two slits in them, you're going to put the penny in one of those slits and then you're going to put the dime in the other slit. This is where the current occurs. Now touch your tongue to the penny and the dime at the same time. You'll feel a slight electric tingle. How does this work? Well, the acid in the lemon reacts differently with each of the two metals. One coin contains positive electric charges, while the other contains negative charges. The charges create the current. Your tongue conducts the charges, causing a small amount of electricity to flow. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's Creative Circle segment. This science fair project was brought to you by Reader's Digest, Extraordinary Uses for Ordinary Things.
This is an Inuit legend, Otik's Tale. In the beginning, there was a woman and a man, and nothing else walked or swam or flew in the world until one day the woman dug a great hole in the ground and began fishing in it. One by one, she pulled out all the animals, and the last one she pulled out of the hole was a caribou. Then Kila, who is the god of the sky, told the woman the caribou was the greatest gift of all, for the caribou would be the sustenance of man. The woman set the caribou free and ordered it to go over the land and multiply. And the caribou did as the woman said. And in time, the land was filled with caribou, so the sons of the woman hunted well. And they were well fed and well clothed and had good skin tents to live in, all from the caribou. The sons of the woman hunted only the big fat caribou, for they had no wish to kill the weak and the small and the sick, since these were no good to eat, nor were their skins much good. And after a time, it happened that the sick and the weak came to outnumber the fat and the strong. And when the sons saw this, they were dismayed, and they complained to the woman. Then the woman made magic and spoke to Kela and said, "Your work is no good, for the caribou grow weak and sick. And if we eat them, we must grow weak and sick also." Kela heard. He said, "My work is good. I shall tell Amaric, the spirit of the wolf, and he shall tell his children. And they will eat the sick and the weak and the small caribou, so that the land will be left for the fat and the strong ones. And this is why the caribou and the wolf are one. For the caribou feeds the wolf, but it is the wolf who keeps the caribou strong."
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's show on Fire Within Us. If you have any comments or suggestions about this program that you heard today, then please email us at cjwt@wawate.on.ca. I'm Trish Crawford, and you're listening to Fire Within Us on Wawate Radio.
Your fingertips across my skin, the palm trees swaying in the wind, images. You sang me Spanish lullabies, the sweetest sadness in your eyes, clever trick.
Lovers always do.